classic serial Scott Cherry's boisterous take on the R.S. Surtees novels featuring the lovable master of hounds, John Jorrocks. We present Jorrocks's Jaunts and Jollities, Part 1.
Mr. Nash.
Yes?
Come in, good sir, come in. I've been expecting you.
You have?
Oh, yes, indeed. I've been so excited at the prospect of your visit that I've been all of a tremble from the feebles and the flutters.
Really?
To be visited by a man of your reputation and countless achievements, and may I say, standing here admiring your discreetly powdered hair,
yes,
your white waistcoat with silver spangles,
oh, yeah,
and your utter profusion of ruffles and frills, a man with your exceptional style and grace.
Oh, I...
To be in the presence of the legendary and illustrious Beau Nash, our greatest ever arbiter of elegance and good taste, the man responsible for making Bath the style capital of the Western world.
Oh, sir, please.
You were always my hero, good sir, always.
Was I?
Oh, yes. As a child, I often insisted that my mother dress me as your protégé in your trademark white hat, embroidered waistcoat and kaleidoscopic shirt studs.
Ah.
And then I'd patrol the nursery, persecuting my younger brothers with your strictures and decrees. Gentlemen of fashion must show breeding and respect to ladies at all times. Repeaters of lies and scandal shall be shunned by all company.
And how did your brothers respond?
With some confusion.
Oh.
They were, after all, mere infants.
Of course.
The only reason I sought employment as master of ceremonies was because my one ambition in life, Mr. Nash, my one supreme aim, was to match your illustrious career. Which is why, good sir, I find myself caught up in what I can only describe as the most terrifying tangle of events.
Oh, no.
And why I stand before you like poor Chiron from the Greek myth, an innocent bystander caught up in the madness of Hercules' drunken fight with the centaurs.
Hercules? Centaurs? Dear God.
I've always imagined, Mr. Nash, that I might, in some fantastic, magical kind of way, be able to summon you for advice in time of extreme crisis. And here you are.
Here I am. Now, how can I help?
Well, as I say, I recently became master of ceremonies in the spa town of Handley Cross. You may know it. It lies in the rich grazing district of the Vale of Sheepwash, a most picturesque setting where neither factory nor foundry disturb its quietude. Wild roses fill the hedges, fragrant woodbine clamber everywhere, and the hazel grows with a clear, eel-like skin.
Handley Cross, you say?
You've heard of it?
No.
Oh, anyway, it first came to prominence some years ago when a visiting physician, a certain Dr. Sebastian Mello, drank a glass of water from the local spring and found that it had an immediate beneficial effect on what he described as his deranged digestive powers.
Ladies and gentlemen of Handley Cross, I am about to make a proposal which I feel sure will transform this sleepy little hamlet, this simple, unpretending nowhere of a village, full of nothing but half-wit basket-makers and thumb-sucking stone-pickers, living under so many hopeless straggles of woe-begone fat.
Hey, oi! Steady, hold up. Slow your horses a bit there, my friend.
Yes!
There is nothing wrong with basket-making.
No!
Or stone-picking.
No!
Or for that much, as scaring draws.
I'm sorry. But will scaring crows for a living buy a mattress for your bed? Will picking stones get you a carpet for your stairs? Or basket making put glass in your windows? Ladies and gentlemen of Handley Cross, I promise to transform this quiet, secluded little backwater into a thriving spa, more fashionable than Cheltenham and more illustrious than Tunbridge Wells. I will replace these dusty potholed lanes with smooth macadamised streets, give you gaslit pavements and shopping parades, offering employment to your filthiest foul-mouthed ditch digger and your dizziest, most crack-brained village idiot. Within a year, I'll have you all working as bonnet makers, plumassier, hosiers, sellers of quality muslin, dealers in intricate brocades, and the proud purveyors of high-quality cutlery and lacquerware.
The villagers stood in complete and utter silence, as they imagined their village becoming a fashionable resort for the sick and the infirm, just like Bath, Mr. Nash.
Ah.
With invalids coming in their hundreds, if not thousands, to take the local waters and spend their money in newly built monster shops.
Monster shops?
Oh, monster shops are all the rage, and browsing their many departments, the new entertainment. Ladies rarely enter shops nowadays with the intention of spending any money.
I see.
Now, just as Dr. Mello was concluding his address, several of Handley Cross's prominent local dignitaries happened to be taking a stroll past the village green.
You, sir, could become the manager of a shop in the style of a Parisian depot or oriental warehouse.
Ooh.
And you, madam, the proprietress of a busy coffee shop or genteel tea garden.
And as the local mob grew more and more excited, the prominent local dignitaries grew more and more agitated, ever mindful of society's greatest rule, that the lower orders should never be inflamed by the intoxicating nature of expectation.
Indeed.
Which is why they wasted no time in asking the doctor to join them in the nearby temperance hall.
What do you think you were doing, man?
How dare you make such promises to the people of this village?
Well, I...
What gives you the right to stand in front of Michael Minnie?
A man whose family has picked stones from my fields for generations.
And promise him the kind of employment that'll buy him a carpet.
I merely... Tell him Bill Dawkins he could be the manager of a shop in the style of a Parisian depot.
The man's a poacher.
He skins rabbits alive.
Oh, with his teeth.
And as for telling Hannah Bass she could run a tea garden...
Well, she looked perfectly capable. The only thing Anna Bass is capable of is walking down the high street flaunting an excessive décolletage.
Mr. Mulligan.
Her bodice isn't so much off the shoulder as round the waist.
Brother, please.
Oh, sorry.
In which case, her tea garden should be a roaring success.
Oh, now, look, no, well, I, won't you at least...
At least allow me to explain myself. I have here a bottle containing water taken from the mineral spring in your village, and I would ask you all to observe.
That water was taken from our spring on Hoppus Lane.
Indeed.
Oh, but it's hardly a spring at all.
It's little more than a brawny trickle.
A brawny trickle which just happens to possess some rather unique medicinal properties, which, I'm convinced, offer a unique cure for our nation's greatest complaint.
Which is?
Guess.
What?
Our nation's greatest complaint?
Rickets.
No.
Green sickness.
No. Psoriasis.
No.
Mold shot.
Scrofula.
A Derrington's dropsy.
No.
Gout.
Giddiness in the head.
A dyspepsia.
No.
This is ridiculous.
Mold shot.
Oh, no, I said mold shot. It's not mold shot.
None of these things.
Well, what in heaven's name is it, man?
Constipation.
I'm sorry.
Your mineral waters offer what I believe to be the only reliable cure for constipation and its attendant disorders. The twistings of the gut, the rumblings of the stomach, and last but not least, the volatile eruptions of the lower intestine.
Constipation.
If you can persuade the banks to lend you the money, then I'm convinced we can transform this sleepy little hamlet into a thriving spa, more fashionable than
Thank
Cheltenham,
you, Doctor, but
and
you've said
more
this
illustrious
already.
Than Tunbridge Wells. Here, try some. Sir.
Well?
Try the water. Come on.
Yeah, well,
I think you'll find it has some of the fizz and sparkle of a good 40-shilling champagne.
Simpkins?
Yes?
You're always saying you're the one with the progressive scientific sensibility.
Well?
You try it.
Very well.
Yeah.
It possesses some unique medicinal properties, you say?
An intriguing blend of chally beets, saline and sulphur.
Well? Well?
I wonder if I might try.
Brother, no. Oh.
You try it, Mr. Mulligrubs.
Mm.
It has a certain
A certain...
And you're convinced... Oh, yes. You're convinced this water cures all... blockages.
It cured me.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. And I tried everything. The purging electuary, the diuretic powder, the grand syringe.
Syrup of marshmallows?
All the drastics in the world couldn't get my bowels to shift. But having treated myself with your mineral waters, I can assure you I am completely cured.
A thriving spa.
More fashionable than...
Buxton.
And more illustrious than...
Gentlemen, Pombe. Please.
Sure. Were we to act on the doctor's advice,
yes,
we'd have to clear the common of geese to make way for an assembly room.
Yes.
Knock down the abandoned water mill and replace it with a
pump room.
Tear down old Mother Hickey's cottage and build a bathhouse.
And lo and behold...
We're a spa.
But I
don't... You don't need to knock anything down. You've space enough for all manner of attractions. For gaming houses, ballrooms, pleasure gardens, sham castles, fairy grottos.
A scientific and literary institution?
Why ever not?
A museum of natural and artificial curiosities?
That too.
Ooh.
Mr. Simpkins, control yourself.
They're building a line up. To Silverley.
So they are.
Perhaps they could take the line through our village.
Oh.
But would the banks lend us the money?
No.
Mr. Nash, he succeeded.
Oh.
And within weeks, just as Mr. Muleygrubs had proposed, the geese were cleared from the common to make way for a pump room. And old Mother Hickey's cottage was brushed aside to make way for a square of 40 important houses. As new streets began branching out in all directions, in the hope that the sick would flock to Handley Cross, attracted by the rising fame of its medicinal waters.
And did they?
The Northern Counties Railway Company agreed to take their line through the town. And then, in time for the following spring, with the rash of new buildings still in progress, I was appointed Master of Ceremonies.
Oh, sir!
With the express aim of attracting 500 visitors in my first season.
Could I please remind those of you using the public baths that ladies must be in possession of a decent shift at all times, and that no gentleman will be allowed into the baths without proper waistcoat and drawers. Dancing will begin at 7, and Mr. West...
Sir?
I would ask you not to bring your daughter into the ballroom this evening. The girl doesn't have the slightest notion of how to dance the minuet. I keep telling her to keep her head upright, her shoulders back, and her breast extended... Thus, to give greater grace to the body. But she insists on stooping and making herself look positively warped.
I'm so sorry, Mr. Doleful.
And Miss Hyde?
Yes?
May I request that you keep your brother away from the dining room at all times?
Oh?
I know the poor man only suffers from a mild psoriasis, but Lady Montague and one or two other ladies of a rank superior to your own are quite convinced he's in the advanced stages of leprosy.
Oh.
So I would ask him to remain in his chamber and only come out after dark. Ah, the dancing is about to begin.
Mr. Doleful?
Ladies, if you could ensure your dresses are hooped around the waist and your hair in lappets.
Both sides.
Unless you wish to appear as a pirate in fancy dress.
Mr. Doleful?
Mr. Barnington?
You were supposed to be at the meeting of our town commissioners 30 minutes ago.
Well, I'm sorry, but I can't possibly attend a meeting with our town commissioners. I'm far too busy.
No, I must warn you, sir, that Mr. Muleygrubs and the others are in no mood to be kept waiting.
Warn me as much as you like, Mr. Barnington, but I'm afraid I have a far more pressing engagement with Lord Bosworth.
Mr. Doleful, I must insist. Please.
He's here.
Ah.
This is really most inconvenient.
Well, sir, I have
Lord,
to say that...
Lord Bosworth has just told me the furnaces aren't providing sufficient heat for his vapour bath.
Well, the
and
reason
A Mr. Pig, who I take to be little more than a common entertainer, has turned up claiming he's been booked to appear in the assembly rooms with his performing pigeon.
Mr. Doleful.
And if that isn't enough, Dr. Mello is expecting me to assist him in his illustrated lecture on acute abdominal spasms. So can we please be brief?
There isn't going to be a lecture, Mr. Doleful.
I can assure you that there is.
I can assure you. assure you that there ain't.
The doctor is going to explain how the waters of Handy Cross cure abdominal spasms and stimulate sluggish nerves before going on to demonstrate his portable rising douche.
There won't be a lecture or demonstration, Mr. Doleful, because Dr. Mellow won't be here to give it.
He's disappeared.
Taking £8,000 of our money with him. I knew he'd turn out to be a charlatan and a crook.
Oh, sister, please.
It would appear that Dr. Mellow wasn't a qualified physician after all.
What?
But was, in fact, part of a criminal syndicate exploiting that gullible union of greed and speculation that calls itself the Northern Counties Railway Company.
£8,000.
So you can tell Lord Bosworth that the furnaces aren't providing sufficient heat for the vapour baths because we don't have money for coal.
And the banks aren't going to lend us any more money till we start paying back what we've already borrowed.
We need a strategy, Mr. Doleful. Some kind of a plan to bring in more money.
Which means bringing in more visitors. No,
and in order to do that, you're going to have to change your methods.
Yes, indeed.
Change my methods?
Or it's debtor's prison for all of us.
I couldn't possibly change my methods.
We appointed you Master of Ceremonies because you assured us you could make Handley Cross more popular than Harrogate.
You promised us you'd come up with the kind of entertainments that would attract 500 visitors in your first season. And how many have we had?
16.
Oh, we've had 50 at least.
Darnington, the subscription book.
Yes. Oh, since our grand opening 4 months ago, we've had 16 paying visitors.
See?
Or 17 if we include True Boy Tommy Towler.
Who?
Lady Granville's bloated Pekingese.
16 visitors is nowhere near enough.
So you're going to have to come up with a strategy to bring people in.
Well, I have something here which may go some way to providing a turning point in our fortunes.
Oh.
A new order of events for the dancing.
Oh. We're going to need more than just dancing.
If we're to attract more people, then we have to offer new kinds of entertainment.
Not just minuets and quadrilles.
And what, Mr. Mooleygrubs, would these new entertainments be, exactly?
I was thinking we could hire some comedians for the theatre.
And some conjurers and tumblers.
And rope dancers.
And a brass band. Oh, people love a good brass band.
And some performing pigeons, perhaps? Mr. Mooleygrubs?
Oh.
If that's what people want.
Did you book the pigeons? Did you book Mr. Pig and his performing pigeons?
He's got more than just pigeons. He's got a whole menagerie of talented animals capable of performing all kinds of wonders.
Such as?
He's got a horse that tells the time.
Really?
And a dog that does mathematics. It's been exhibited before all the sovereigns of Europe. Exciting admiration and astonishment with its unparalleled sagacity.
A dog that... Oh, well, let's just throw open our doors to the shilling people, shall we? Let's bring in the rabble and offer them cockfighting.
And bull baiting.
And a public hanging.
I'm surprised you're not intending to open an alehouse.
Yeah.
And anything else that encourages Sabbath breaking and blasphemy.
Well, if it keeps the bunks off our backs.
Well,
Miss Barnington, we have to give the people what they want, which means that Mr. Doleful, and you for that matter, have to be more tolerant of ordinary people.
Ordinary people?
Well, obviously we're not referring to the working class.
Although, personally, I'm all for seeking to include the higher grades of factory society.
What I'm talking about is run-of-the-mill gentlefolk.
Run-of-the-mill...
Who don't much care for your kind of stiff, old-fashioned dancing.
These days, Mr. Doleful, people like a good polka.
Or a waltz.
A waltz is a riotous dance of German invention which has no place in civilised society.
Oh, Prince Albert has just led our queen in a waltz. In a costume ball at Buckingham Palace.
I rest my case.
Did you say costume ball?
What of it?
Well, that's an idea. We could get the visitors to get up in fancy dress.
And ask me to dress as a Chinaman.
You already dress as a Chinaman! Or rather, some frenchified dandy of a count.
How dare you? I dress as any self-respecting master of ceremonies should dress.
Well, you're going to have to start dressing like the rest of us.
I...
And you can start by shaking the powder out your hair, getting rid of that ridiculous big white hat, and taking off those absurd pearl-coloured stockings.
If you wish to relieve me of my crown, gentlemen, then why not just say so?
We do wish to relieve you of your crown, only...
Oh.
Miss Barnington's all for keeping you on, because... Like you, she seems to possess an inordinate loathing for the vast majority of humankind.
I beg your pardon?
And sees you as her only ally.
Brother? Say something. I do not possess an inordinate loathing for the vast majority of humankind. I merely happen to be alarmed by the rise in opportunities for leisure among the uneducated classes. And may I remind you, Mr. Mooleygrubs, that my church provides for all manner of philanthropic and charitable causes.
Oh, sister, please.
Having just given 5 guineas to the Society for supplying, at cost price, fuel and clothes to the poor during winter.
Oh, Miss Barrington,
And having only yesterday published a 2-page leaflet on behalf of the Society for the Rescue of Boys Not Yet Convicted of Any Criminal Offence. So I would ask you not to... What was that?
He's gone.
Mr. Dolphel has gone.
What?
And with any luck, he'll be leaving Handley Cross for good.
Oh.
You can imagine the state I was in, Mr. Nash.
The Philistines.
Is it any wonder I resolved to escape Handley Cross as quickly as I could and seek refuge in the one place I knew to be both reputable and civilized, where those who affect a refined, select gentility are always made welcome? Brighton.
Ah.
So, having hurriedly packed my bags and cases and avoiding the railway, as I had no desire to be sent insane by travelling at 50 miles an hour, I rushed to the nearby coach house.
Thanks for the London stagecoach.
Miss Barnett.
Mr. Dolphel.
Is something wrong?
I must beseech you, Mr. Dolphel, not to leave Handley Cross. You can't abandon me.
But, Miss Barnington,
you can't leave me to fight them on my own.
Miss Barnington,
If you only knew what Mr. Mooleygrubs has planned for the town.
I think I have some idea.
He's determined to make Handley Cross more famous for recreation than for cures. And he's actually devised a plan. Look. I found these papers in my brother's desk. The minutes from several meetings to which I wasn't invited.
The temperance hall to become an alehouse called the Cock and Bottle.
Yes.
The theatre to present the likes of Mr. Henry Smith and his comic monologues.
It's to become a common music hall.
Oh, as well as stage dramas such as Fashion and Famine, The Lone Mansion and Its Mistress, A Villain and His Victim in a Tableau of Excitement. Oh no. Surely not.
The grossest recreation of them all.
But, Miss Barnington, this will be the ruin of the town.
Quite so.
A committee of management will seek the creation of the Handley Cross Hunt. They wish to offer fox hunting.
I can't let it happen, Mr. Dolphel.
We shall seek to engage the talents of a certain Mr. John Jorrocks of Great Coram Street, London, as Master of the Hounds. A wealthy gentleman, he comes highly recommended, having previously served as... Chairman of the Society of Good Fellows, recorder of the Wide Awake Club, and esteemed member of the Surrey Hunt.
According to my brother, the revival in Leamington's fortunes has been solely due to the Pytchley Hounds.
Fox hunting.
Oh. Nothing contributes more to the levelling of ranks and the doing away of all distinctions.
Indeed.
If Mr. Mooleygrub succeeds, then Handley Cross will be overrun by all that is vulgar, ill-bred, offensive and loathsome.
I was in Tunbridge Wells when the West Kent Hounds were at their height. They claimed to have among their followers paupers in receipt of poor relief.
Only yesterday I read in the Times about an Oxford chimney sweep who boasted of regularly riding to hounds with a duke. Mr. Dolphel, I have always seen you as my ally against all that is indecent and coarse.
I have
always admired your innate understanding of the importance of discipline and restraint. And although I have never been able to persuade you to visit my church, I do sense within you, sir, the light of an inner goodness shining from within.
Well, I have to say, Miss Barnington, as I think I've said to you before, that I do believe the cultivation of taste to be a moral duty.
There was something else you said.
Mm-hmm.
When you were insisting to Mr. Mooleygrubs that the guests should never be allowed to raise their voices during whist.
That an elegant disorder was distinct from a vulgar confusion.
Oh.
And that a game of whist invariably tended towards the latter.
And after Mr. Simpkins made one of his radical speeches... suggesting that every child has a right to education and opportunity?
That an extreme inequality of knowledge and wealth was the natural order of things.
Yes.
I then went on to challenge his progressive sensibility further by saying that it is monstrous to suggest that all of us are capable of having hearts as sinful as the common wretches that crawl about the earth.
Indeed.
And my current aphorism, of which I'm somewhat proud, is that people will have no need of God if they all have
soft chairs.
Oh, you heard me say it.
I wrote it down.
Rosie!
Can't you see that by fighting for all that is elegant and tasteful, you will help me fight for all that is pious and good? But victory against this inexorable tide of luxury and vice can only be won if we resolve to stand together.
Rosie!
Please don't abandon me!
Mr. Dolfo!
Mr. Pig!
Oh, you won't see the chance Rose of your meat's flown off again. Oh, keep darn it!
Sorry,
I... Oh, have you seen Rosie? She's one of our pigeons! You know, the one that walks a tightrope?
And turns
the crank on the little carousel. The dog keeps scaring her off. Third time this week he's done it. All right, the second time. Oh, there she is! Rosie! No! Oh, come here!
Please, Mr. Dolfo, don't leave me to struggle alone in a godless world of alehouses, fox hunting and mathematical dogs! Please.
Very well, Miss Barlington. I'll stay.
Oh, thank you, sir. Thank you. Oh, I must go at once. A public stagecoach is hardly the place for an unaccompanied woman to be. I will bid you good day, Mr. Dolfo.
Miss Barlington, wait.
Oh.
One moment, please.
Sir?
If we're to influence the plans of Mr. Muley Grubbs and the others, then I suggest we keep our true intentions concealed. By seeming to agree with all that they propose. And to further us in that purpose,
yes,
I will appear to obey Muley Grubbs by exchanging my pearl-coloured stockings for the kind of costume that would puzzle and astound the property man of a theatre. Oh, I can see myself now. A single-breasted militia coat, denuded of all facings and trappings.
Oh, sir.
A shrivelled, buff kerseymere waistcoat, a pair of moleskin breeches darned and patched at the knees.
No.
Scuffed hessian boots, kid gloves, a dirty white. I'll even carry a large hunting whip and wear an oilskin hat.
Then I, too, will disguise my true intentions and appear to the world and to my God as if I have failed in my life of devotion. I shall cast aside my linen dress and assume the gaudy ostentation of a woman from the pages of the ladies' magazine or La Belle Ensemble. I shall wear the fashionable colours of crimson, claret and poussière de Paris.
Miss Barlington.
My coiffure shall be either à la grecque or à la Connelly, but always à la Peruvienne.
Ah.
My gown shall be looped attaché, my bonnet réchauffé, and I shall carry a delicate parasol of exquisite bombazine. And in the evening,
yes,
if possessed of sufficient courage and dare,
yes,
I shall contrive to appear décolleté.
Oh.
Good day, Mr. Dolfo.
Good day, Miss Barlington.
Oh.
So you resolved to stay?
Well, I...
Because you were enamoured of a lady.
Mr. Nash, please.
Oh, I did many a foolish thing for the love of a woman. I could remember shocking all of Bath society by taking in Fanny the flower seller after she'd been ravished by the Duke of Marlborough.
Mr. Nash, I can assure you that my feelings for Miss Barlington were based
then
on...
Then I took up with Miss Juliana Popjoy, who my friends insisted was utterly mad, and who did indeed spend the last years of her life living inside a tree.
Sir.
And then there was Mrs. Hill, described as a termagant beyond the imagining of Solomon, but who was a dutiful, loving nurse in the final, painful weeks of my life. There's nothing wrong with losing your heart to a lady, Mr. Dolfo. Nothing at all. Even if she is an evangelist.
Oh, Any sign of a train?
Well, the platform's that crowded, I can hardly see along the line.
Get the people back to the town square. Tell them Mr. Jorrocks is that rich he'll be throwing sovereigns from the balcony of the Dragon Hotel.
Right.
Oh, you give the mob a half-day holiday, they go completely wild.
I'm worried, Mr. Muley Grubbs.
You're always worried.
Well, we don't know anything about hunting, and we're asking Mr. Jorrocks to be master of the hounds when we don't even have any hounds.
The hounds have arrived. They're just a little unruly, that's all.
What about the foxes?
What about them?
Oh, a fox hasn't been seen round these parts in years.
We'll bring one in.
On a train?
In a bag.
Oh.
I've been reading up. You rub it with aniseed so the hounds don't kill it, then you bag it up and use it again.
Oh, but Mr. Jorrocks is clearly a man with a lot of hunting experience. He'll know it's the same fox.
Oh, listen to that crowd, Barnington. They're convinced Mr. Jorrocks will save this town. And they've every right to be convinced. We've already had over 100 inquiries from folk wanting to subscribe to the hunt, some willing to pay as much as 30 guineas. We've got to make this work. Good God.
Mr. Doleful?
Gentlemen?
It is Mr. Doleful, I take it.
Indeed.
You've effected quite a change, sir.
Well,
he looks almost plain, don't he, Mr. Barnington?
I have to say, Mr. Doleful, it's a vast improvement.
Thank you.
I'm tempted to say you look quite dull.
And in keeping with your claim that a master of hounds is superior to a master of ceremonies, you'll be pleased to hear that I've vacated my house in favour of Mr. Jorrocks, taking everything except my beloved Schweighofer.
Your what?
My piano.
Oh.
And I'm now lodging in a single room above Miss Jelly's, the pastry cook and confectioner.
That's why you smell of almonds.
Good God! Miss Barnington?
Sister?
I would ask you, Mr. Mooleygrubs, not to take the Lord's name in vain.
What is this, the Day of Transformations?
Sir?
Miss Barnington, you're a veritable explosion of colour. What have you done? Fallen into a paint pot?
Is that crinoline?
The dress is crinoline. The pantaloons, silk. Oh. I would ask you gentlemen not to gawp.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
It's here! The train's here!
Oh, he's here! He's here!
Come on!
Quick, Barnington! Mr. Jorrocks has arrived!
Coming!
Miss Barnington. I have to say that you look altogether exquisite.
And I have to say that you look altogether nondescript.
Yeah. The Empress Eugenie could never hope to look more elegant.
I would remind you, sir, that I am a Calvinist.
Your shawl?
Indian.
The embroidery?
Turkish.
The perfume?
Eau de Pompadour. I smell almonds.
Macaroons.
I'm sorry?
I'm living above Miss Jelly's pastry shop.
Ah.
Does the aroma offend you?
No, no, Mr. Doleful. I have to confess that I'm somewhat partial to a macaroon during moments of abject surrender. We must continue to play our parts. You shall go and welcome Mr. Jorrocks. Mm. I shall hurry to the square, where I've promised to pay the vegetarian dissenters of Skipton 20 shillings to shout, "Fox hunters shall go to hell."
What did you say?
I know I said the word should never be uttered in public unless discussing Milton. But extreme circumstances call for extreme measures. We must go, quickly. Will you help me? My dress is sort of...
Well...
It's stuck on the hoops.
No,
don't push.
There's no sign of him.
Perhaps he went second class.
Yeah, why would he go second class when he's supposed to be richer than Croesus?
As a sign of modesty.
What about the carriage at the back?
Oh, just a cattle pen holding a few sheep, a donkey.
Hello there!
And a fat man in a low-crowned hat.
Hello!
Asleep amongst the chickens.
Excuse me!
Him?
Well, he was asleep amongst the chickens.
It's one of you, Mr. Mooleygrubs.
Yes, sir. And you are?
Oh, no.
Jorrocks.
He's not a gentleman.
Mr. John Jorrocks.
He's a cock.
Shh.
at your service.
Mr. Marmaduke Mooleygrubs at yours.
Mr. Mooleygrubs.
Yes, and this is Mr. Barnington.
Sir.
Mr. Barnington.
Why didn't you go in a carriage?
They wouldn't let me smoke.
Oh, and here comes our master of ceremonies.
Oh.
Mr. Doleful.
Yes?
May I introduce Mr. John Jarricks?
What?
This is an honour, Mr. Doleful. A complete honour. The illustrious Miss Eremus Doleful. I've heard all about you, sir. Your reputation goes before you, and I am in awe. Let me shake your hand. My grip too strong. I do apologise. When I get excited, I lose all sense of my own. Oh, gentlemen, you must allow a child of impulse and generous feelings to... allow me to embrace you all. This is the proudest day of my... to be master of the Hanley Crosshounds. Master of the... Oh, gentlemen, my baggage, quick!
Mr. Jorrocks!
I can't lose my luggage!
Careful, Mr. Jorrocks!
Don't get back on board!
I've got my case and my saddle! Ah, and I've bought you all some Westphalia hams! Out of the way, gentlemen, while I throw the case!
Go!
Oh, sorry, Mr. Doleful!
Mr. Jorrocks, jump before the train gets too fast!
Warming pan, catch!
Sorry!
Have you got butter on your fingers or what, Mr. Barnington? Now, where are those hams?
In heaven's name, Mr. Jorrocks!
Jump before it's too late!
Here they are! Watch out!
Oh!
You seem to have a talent for being in the wrong place, Mr. Doleful!
My eye!
Jump, man!
Mr. Jorrocks, careful!
No, don't jump! You may hurt yourself!
No! Jump, Mr. Jorrocks! Jump!
Free! 2, 1!
This was the gentleman they'd appointed as master of foxhounds?
This wasn't a gentleman, Mr. Nash. This was a haystack with a hat on top. I'd seen periwinkle sellers with more style. He looked as if he'd won his coat in a bet and his breeches in a raffle. And he embraced us. As if he'd just scored the winning goal in a game of village football. His stubbly cheek rubbing against mine. His breath one part air, three parts pickled herring.
Come in, good sir, come in. Mr. Jorrocks.
Sorry to make you carry my case, Mr. Doleful. Only my arm is still hurting.
Oh, not at all.
Well, I warned you against jumping from the train, Mr. Jorrocks.
If I hadn't done, I'd be halfway to Scotland by now.
Indeed.
Oh, drop the case there if you would, Mr. Doleful. How's your eye?
Well, it's...
May I take this opportunity, Mr. Jorrocks, of welcoming you to Hanley Cross? To have a gentleman of your known talent and experience as Master of Hounds.
Oh.
A man who will doubtless command the respect and obedience of his followers and, I'm sure, the regard and admiration of the entire hunting world.
And may I take this opportunity, Mr. Mooleygrubs, of thanking you for appointing me. Blister my kidneys. But it's a pleasant thing when humanity estimates one's value at the price one sets on oneself. But, sir, tell me about the hounds.
Hmm?
Are there many old dogs in the pack? Do the young ones carry a good head?
Well,
have they plenty of bone? A weedy hound is only fit to hunt a cat in a kitchen. Can they trot 15 miles and come back with their sterns up?
Mr. Doleful?
Yes?
Can they trot 15 miles and come back with their sterns up?
Who?
The hounds, man, the hounds.
How are your foxes? Are they ringers or straight runners?
Mr. Doleful, would you say the foxes are ringers or straight runners?
A ringer is only an hare with a tail, as far as I'm concerned.
I can assure you that you'll find no ringers in the Vale of Sheepwash. Will you, Mr. Doleful?
I have to say that I have absolutely no idea.
And now, Mr. Jorrocks, you mustn't keep the people of Hanley Cross waiting a moment longer. Are you ready for your grand address?
My what?
Oh, I shall say these few words by way of introduction and then invite you out onto the balcony to speak. They're supposed to play See the Conquering Hero Comes After We've Spoken.
I'll be 1 minute, sir, and then the stage will be yours. Ladies and gentlemen of Andley Cross, can we ask the band to stop playing, please?
Mr. Dolfo?
Can they stop playing?
Mr. Dolfo, you're going to have to help me.
Sir?
I had no idea. Well, I've no words prepared. I'm no public speaker, and I've only ever addressed a crowd from the back of Xerxes.
Who?
Miles. Well, what do I say, Mr. Dolphin? What do I say?
I couldn't possibly advise you, Mr. Jorrocks.
Well, you're master of ceremonies. You must be used to speechifying.
Well, it's true. I enjoy a certain mastery over the elements of elocution, having studied under Mr. Ewing. But I can hardly impart the rules of pronunciation, inflections, accent and emphasis necessary for successful public speaking in the space of a single minute.
Oh.
Mr. Jorrocks, if you feel inclined to escape back to London, now is your moment. The next train leaves in under an hour.
No. No. I'm never one to refuse offence, even if it's spiked with broken bottles. But I can't appear dressed like this. Quick, Mr. Dolfo, my jacket.
I'm sorry.
Oh, I can't undo the buttons because of my arm. If you wouldn't mind undressing me, sir.
Undressing you?
If I'm to go before the people as their master of hounds, then I must appear in my new hunting coat, which is in the case. But first, sir, my buttons. Quick, quick.
Oh. They seem very stiff.
You must have some guidance for the unschooled speaker, Mr. Dolfo. Oh, just one tiny little piece of advice. Size of a crumb.
Well...
Yes?
According to Cicero and Quintilian...
Cicero and Quintilian?
Yeah, when that most eloquent of orators, Demosthenes, was asked what was the first point of oratory, he was supposed to have replied, and here I'm employing the rhetorical pause.
Yes.
Sincerity.
Sincerity. Sincerity.
Now, one more button.
Be sincere, Jorrocks. Be sincere. Oh, sorry. Pickled herring.
I shall now ask you to welcome that great and illustrious stranger whose name will soon become as familiar to our ears as Mr. Dickens's household words. A man of unequaled excellency and distinguished worth. And, as I say, a man who is the most scientific fox hunter England ever saw. The illustrious, the great, and the renowned Mr. John Jorrocks! Mr. Jorrocks!
Right, how are you all? Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Moody Grubbs, for that kind introduction. Well... I've come up here to hunt your country and be master of your hounds. Yeah. Not a bad achievement for a grocer and tea trader who was born a son of an humble washerwoman. Yeah. All time is lost. What's not spent in hunting? It's the air that I breathe, and if I have it not, I die. Oh. It is the image of war without its guilt. And with only 5% and 20% of his danger. Hunting is the very breath of my body, the very liver and bacon of my existence. In fact, you'd better call the Lunatic Commission, because my head is nothing but one great big bump of hunting. Many a good run do I have, even in my sleep. And many a dig in the ribs do I give Mrs. Jorrocks. No man is fit to be called a sportsman who doesn't kick his wife out of bed on average once a week. Oh, my friends, if I could go to the kennel now, get out the hounds, find me a fox, have a good chivvy and kill him. For no day is good to me without blood.
Have
Have you been listening?
Yes.
He's a grocer and tea trader.
And the son of a washerwoman.
And there's a Mrs. Jorrocks.
I can promise you that we shall get quagging very soon. And when we do, I'll guarantee you'll all say that John Jorrocks is the man for your money.
Couldn't you have pushed him under the train or done something? What happened to your eye?
He hit me with a Westphalia ham.
He what?
At present, I'm done. And I hope very soon to meet you all in the field. Hey. Adieu! Adieu! Adieu!
Jorrocks, you were nothing less than a sensation.
Oh.
You had the crowd eating out the palm of your hand. Listen!
I was good, wasn't I?
Oh, Mr. Jorrocks, this is Miss Barnington.
Charmed.
You've just missed a marvellous speech.
I didn't miss it, Mr. Mooligrubs, I can assure you. I even heard the vegetarian dissenters of Skipton cheering.
Possibly the greatest speech in the history of all oratory.
And I owe it all to you, Mr. Dolphel.
What?
I want to kiss you, sir. I want to plant a kiss on the top of your sweet head.
No,
just one
please.
Big kiss.
No, Mr. Jorrocks, leave me alone. Please.
I did just like you said. I was as sincere as Demosthenes. Sincere right down to my marrow. And it worked. I even used the rhetorical pause.
You taught Mr. Jorrocks the rhetorical pause?
Well,
well done, Dolphel.
Hunting is the image of war without its guilt and with only 25% of its danger. Oh, where did that come from?
It was brilliant.
Call the Lunatic Commission because my head is nothing but one great big... Oh, I'm going back out there. What? Give them some more. They deserve it.
Please.
Oh, it's a shame to give them beef and no pudding.
We've other matters to attend to.
Like showing me the hounds, you mean, eh?
What a speech!
Congratulations, sir.
Mr. Jorrocks, Mr. Simpkins.
Sir.
I've never seen the lower orders so possessed.
I want to get back out there, but they won't let me.
You'll be pleased to hear that the Hunt now has 200 subscribers.
Oh, paid up.
Fully.
Excellent!
We should all go and have a drink to celebrate.
Oh.
Where's the nearest outhouse?
Being built.
Oh, I can't wait that long. Show me the hounds instead. Come on, gentlemen.
Mr. Dolphel.
Yes?
If you wouldn't mind bringing my case.
I'll take it.
But I thought the hounds were completely mad and had been discarded by the Cheshire Hunt.
Mr. Muleygrubs is having them trained. As we speak.
He's a monster. No. Are you all right with that?
It's heavier than it looks.
Well, it looks heavy. He's a monster.
Yes.
Beyond my wildest imagining.
He made me dress him.
What?
Treated me as if I was a common valet de chambre whilst expelling the pestilential vapours that had been stewing away in his not inconsiderable stomach.
If that man is permitted to stay in Handley Cross, then we may as well post the keys to the Kingdom of Heaven through the Devil's own letterbox.
Calm yourself, Miss Barnington. You're starting to flush.
I won't calm myself.
Now you're beginning to glow.
From the moment Dr. Mellow arrived with his talk of transforming our humble little village into a republic of inducement and pleasure, I knew I had to act. But what did I do? I just sat back and deferred to that pompous sheriff of the county and self-satisfied justice of the peace, Mr. Mooligrubs, with his pot belly and his red face and his bald head.
Now you're starting to convulse.
And my spineless, witless brother and the progressive Mr. Simpkins, who openly confesses to nearly being converted to socialism in the space of a single afternoon. This is a Sunday. A Sunday, Mr. Dolphel. You should never hear the sound of music on a Sunday unless it's in a church. And what do they go and do?
Employ a band whose most recent performance was at the Logwood Pig and Poultry Association's annual show.
Oh.
They were a temperance band.
Oh.
Before winning gold in the Northern Championships.
Oh. We've been usurped, Mr. Dolphel, and are completely without influence.
Don't despair.
200 subscribers. They could be anyone. Pastry cooks. Tobacco traders.
Miss Barnington.
Horse dealers.
Please.
Sheep farmers.
We must keep to our plan.
Grocers. Tea traders.
So you were usurped, Mr. Dolphel.
And within a matter of days, the new
king of Handley Cross was joined by his queen and had invited us all to dine with them in what they were soon to call Diana Lodge. Had it been too much to ask, Mr. Nash?
There, there.
To be left alone, to turn Handley Cross into a small haven of respectability and good taste. I'd so wanted to honour your memory.
I know.
Was so intent on emulating your character and renown. And there I was, having to stand aside for a fox hunter.
And Mrs. Jorrocks?
Hmm?
What was she like?
More vol-au-vents, anyone? Go on their tops.
I got a special from Fortnum and Mason.
Oh, yum.
Yes, thank you, Mrs. Jorrocks.
And shall I ask the maid to bring back the savoury omelette?
I'll stick to the mutton, my love.
I think I could manage a little more of the savoury omelette, Mrs. Jorrocks. Thank you.
Oh, of course, Mr. Simpkins. Bessie! Miss Barnington?
Mm.
Can I interest you in the last of the mince veal?
I've eaten enough, thank you.
Oh, but you haven't eaten anything.
Well,
I could do with fattening up.
I'm sorry.
Well, you're as thin as a rasher of wind. Mr. Dolphel, more iced champagne?
No, thank you.
Oh, it's not your homemade gooseberry. It's Chateau Lafitte. We get it from Crockford's. Its tops cost a fortune.
I've had enough to drink, thank you, Mrs. Jorrocks.
I've been meaning to thank you, Mr. Dolphel, for moving out so that we can move in.
Oh, yes, it was really very, very kind.
No, not at all.
And it was so generous to leave us your piano.
Yes.
Julia plays the piano, don't you, my love?
Oh, John.
And not only does she play, she also sings.
Oh, really?
Like an angel.
Oh, Mrs. Jorrocks, I do hope you'll sing something before the evening's out.
Oh, no.
Please, Mrs. Jorrocks.
No, I couldn't possibly. No, modesty forbids.
This song always makes her cry.
Oh, dear.
She's never been the same since the death of little Nell. Are you sure you can sing this, my love? You know how it breaks your heart.
Try.
Sure you haven't had too much fizz?
Woman's bear tree, touch not a single
tormenting my Schweighofer.
She said I needed fattening up.
It belonged to the great Charles Allais.
She said I was as thin as a rasher of wind.
It's rumoured to be the piano on which the great Franz Liszt wrote Harmonie Poétique et Religieuse, and she's banging it like a drum and singing the worst song ever written.
The woman's half his age, and have you ever seen so many brooches and bracelets? She looks like a portable pawnbroker's shop.
No, I can't take it any longer. I've got to go and stop.
No, Mr. Dolphel, wait.
Alex! Shall I? No.
Come here. Every time.
I know, it's just that
poultry. You put too much into it.
Oh, no. That poultry.
Like a nightingale.
You keep saying we must keep to our plan, but, sir, what is our plan?
I have no idea.
Well, if you don't come up with a scheme, I will. I have it.
What?
Mr. Jorrocks must suffer an accident.
What?
A most unfortunate accident during his first hunt as Master of the Handley Cross Hounds. An accident that will be so catastrophic and so dire that should he survive, he and his wife will feel compelled to return to London.
Mr. Dolphel! Quickly! Mr. Jorrocks wants to come inside and help him sing his song.
One moment, Mr. Barnington, thank you.
Oh, please, come inside now. Don't keep us waiting.
Augustus.
Yes, sir?
Have you been drinking?
I've only had the one glass. Come on, Mr. Dolphel. Oh, you come too, Celestria.
Celestria? He called you Celestria. Is that your name? Celestria.
You must ensure that Mr. Jorrocks meets with a terrible accident.
But
you must do something during the hunt. Lead his horse over a hazardous jump, or into some treacherous bog, or into the path of an advancing steam train.
But I can't possibly go hunting. I can't really ride a horse. I always fall off, even when they're standing still. Miss Barnington, please.
I've seen a deal of gaiety throughout my noisy life. With all my grand accomplishments, I ne'er could get a wife. The thing I'm most excelling is a PRFG game. A noise all night, in bed all day, and swimming in champagne. Oh, Champagne Charlie's my name.
So is this what you meant, Mr. Doleful, when you described yourself as being like poor Chiron, caught up in the madness of Hercules' drunken fight with the centaurs?
Oh, this was just the beginning of my agonies and afflictions, Mr. Nash. I can assure you, this was just the first of many arrows.
All together! Champagne Charlie is my name. Champagne Charlie is my name. Good for any game of night, my boys. Good for any game of night, my boys. Champagne Charlie is my name. Champagne Charlie is my name. Good for any game of night, boys. Oh, come join me to spray.
Do you feel able to read the credits?
If you wouldn't mind, Mr. Nash.
In Jorrocks, Jaunts and Jollities by R.S. Surtees, John Jorrocks was played by Danny Webb.
Oh, does he have to be first?
In Jorrocks, Jaunts and Jollities by R.S. Surtees, Miss Erebus Doleful was played by Charles Edwards.
And Beau Nash was played by Clive Swift.
Thank you very much. Miss Barnington was Rebecca Sayre and Mr. Muleygrub's Christian Rodska.
Mr. Simpkins was played by Geoffrey Beavers and Mr. Barnington by Grant Gillespie.
Dr. Mellow was Gareth Armstrong, Mr. Pig Rob Hudson and Julia Jorrocks Emma Pearson.
Jorrocks, Jaunts and Jollities was adapted by Scott Cherry. The music was provided by Matthew Scott. The producer and director was Clive Brill.
Happy?
No, not quite. It was a Pacificus production for BBC Radio 4.
Bless you.
Champagne Charlie is my name. Champagne Charlie is my name. Good for a good night, boys. Who come and join me this spring?
And you can hear more of the antics of Mr. Jorrocks and Mr. Doleful at the same time next week. After the news, in a special open book, Mariella Frostrup talks to the novelist Edward St. Aubyn, author of the Booker-nominated Mother's Milk.
Scientists have detected a sharp increase in the level of radiation in the atmosphere.
It's 25 years since the accident at the Chernobyl nuclear power plant.
We're continually fighting against what people say happened and what actually happened in Chernobyl.
Nick Ross travels to the Ukraine to uncover the true health impact of the radiation leak.
Are you saying the worst health consequence has been fear rather than actual disease?
Fallout, the legacy of Chernobyl, on BBC Radio 4, this Tuesday night at 8 o'clock.